The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Content warning. This episode discusses the sexual assault and murder of a teenage girl.
We're so thrilled to report huge news in the Laurel Mitchell case today. Two arrests were made in the 1975 homicide. Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman were apprehended and charged with Laurel's murder. We'll discuss the probable cause affidavit against these two men, which was publicly released today. But first, we'll hear from Sarah Knisley, Laurel's younger sister. Sarah has advocated for her older sister for years. And just a few days ago, she and her older brother finally got the news that they have been waiting to hear for 47 years. My name is Anya Kane. I'm a journalist.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee. I'm an attorney.
We first connected while looking into the Burger Chef murders, an Indiana cold case. Together, we built a spreadsheet documenting hundreds of cases of restaurant-related homicides. That original spreadsheet gave way to our podcast, The Murder Sheet.
Now we maintain that same research-centric, investigative approach as we look into all sorts of homicides, including unsolved cases, historical crimes, and, of course, restaurant murders.
We don't just chat about the headlines. Our podcast is a platform for our journalism. The Murder Sheet focuses on investigative reporting, thoughtful analysis, thorough research, and in-depth interviews.
We're the Murder Sheet.
And this is Beyond the Pillars, the murder of Laurel Jean Mitchell. Arrests. So today, on Tuesday, February 7th, 2023, we heard of the news of the arrests, and we called Sarah. Keep in mind that when she's referring to Kevin, she's not referring to the Murder Sheet's own Kevin Greenlee. She's talking about Captain Kevin Smith of the Indiana State Police. Captain Smith is the ISP post commander for Area 2, the term designating the districts of Bremen, Fort Wayne, and the Indiana Toll Road. He's also the lead detective on Laurel's case.
Hey!
Hello!
Hi!
Oh my gosh!
Oh my god, I know!
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm numb.
Yeah.
Geez. I'm excited, I'm mad, I'm happy, I'm everything.
Oh my gosh. My heart like exploded this morning when I read the news and I was just like, oh my, I'm so happy for you and your brother.
Yeah, he actually went with me to the police station yesterday to get the news.
Oh my gosh. I mean, do you mind if we do a very quick interview for the show where I just ask you about like what it was like and how you're feeling?
I can do that. I can't answer any specific questions about the case.
No, obviously not. And we're not going to ask him.
Okay.
Tell me how you found out.
Okay. Kevin Smith, the IS state police commander that's been running this case since 2012, if not before. He's a local boy that went from detective to captain. And he said he would never give up on this case, and he hasn't. And he called me Saturday and said he wanted to meet with my brother and me at the prosecutor's office in Noble County Prosecutor in Albion at 5:00 Monday. And my brother's like, I'm busy. I'm like, no, you're not. So we got my brother there on time. And they told us they made an arrest. Two people, and they're just a little bit older than my brother. It's crazy.
What was your reaction?
Stunned. Well, to be honest, I had an inkling. Over the last couple weeks, Kevin's been texting me with really weird, random questions about Laurel, like our address when this happened, and she have a driver's license and just weird things. I'm like, isn't all this in a file? So anyway, I just had a feeling something was up. Wasn't sure what until he called Saturday. Then I knew when they requested us at the prosecutor's office, I knew then. And then they told us last night at 5:00. And then I had to sit on it till 10 o'clock this morning. About killed me.
But that is, goodness, that is so exciting. And I mean, how has it been since the news broke?
Lots of phone calls and texts, that's for sure. In fact, I was just, when you called, I was standing outside talking to my neighbor. I'd let my dog out and the dog barked at her. So she came over and we were talking.
Wow.
But yeah.
And then I just guess, like, I mean, what are you looking forward to going forward? I'm sure there'll be a trial. I mean, are you nervous about that? How are you feeling about like the future now?
Oh, I can't wait to get this trial going. I'm going to a hearing tomorrow. My brother's not going. He's probably, I don't know if he'll go to any of it, but I'm going to everything I can go to.
Absolutely. And then I guess, you know, I mean, if you had a message for other families with victims of, you know, unsolved homicides, what would you say to them right now?
Don't lose hope. I honest to God thought this would never, ever get solved. Kevin told me he would do his best to do it. He almost promised me, not quite. He promised to do his best. And he did it. Yeah. There's a lot of luck involved. But he didn't give up. If you got a cop that won't give up, you got it made.
I was like, go Kevin. When I saw this, that's amazing.
Kevin texted me last night. He goes, did you get home safely? And I told my brother that. And he goes, he's awesome. And he just met him yesterday. First time he'd met him. And I said, yeah, he's awesome and a whole lot more.
When we read over the probable cause affidavit, one of the names of the two men stuck out to us, Fred Bandy. When we searched his record on my case, Indiana's online court record system, we found that Bandy had a criminal history. He was charged with fondling or touching a child under 14 in 2016, and with child molesting, child solicitation, contributing to the delinquency of a minor in 2001.
That reminded us of Sarah's story about a dedicated tipster who pushed to meet up with her at a Burger King. You can hear a reference to that story at 5 minutes and 35 seconds in Beyond the Pillars, The Murder of Laurel Jean Mitchell, Part 2. We'll link to that episode in our show notes. That tipster told Sarah that a local child molester had confessed to Laurel's murder. But anyway, that's what I'm talking about here when I mention the Burger King tip. So this Fred Bandy guy, is he from the Burger King tip?
From what? The Burger King what?
Didn't a guy meet you at Burger King?
Oh, yeah, I thought, yes, that's him. Both names. That guy gave me both those names.
Oh, my God.
Because he gave me Bandy, and then as we were wrapping up, he goes, do you have any questions? I said, yeah. I said, do you think he did this alone? He goes, no, I think he had help, and I think it was this guy, and that was that John Lehman. Oh, I mean, they were teenagers when they did this.
It's horrific, and it sounds like that Bandy guy went on to...
Oh, yeah, he's a career criminal.
Yeah. And like, that's just a lesson. Like, tipsters, if you have a tip, just keep coming forward with it.
Exactly. And bless Bill's heart. He's been trying for 22 years to get this through with the cops. I mean, I can't wait to talk to Bill myself, because I know he finally feels justified or relieved. It's not that the cops did not believe him. They just could not do anything until there was some kind of evidence.
100%.
And thankfully they finally got some.
Absolutely.
I can't tell you what, but so don't lose hope. If you got a cop that's worth his salt, go get it.
Amazing. And listen, we'll let you go because we're sure you have like a bunch of calls and stuff to do today. But we just want to say, oh my gosh, like so happy for you. I mean, and like so many of our listeners reached out to us and were like, Sarah is amazing. She's such an advocate for her sister. Their hearts went out to you. And now I'm just like, yes. Like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I want to do a somersault. I mean, like, just congrats. I mean, just I'm so happy for you and your brother.
Well, the funny thing, I just listened to the podcast yesterday because I couldn't put any apps on my phone because my phone's so weird. But I bought a tablet and downloaded it and listened to it yesterday morning. And Kevin said he will, when he gets time, listen to it.
Okay, totally. Well, we vaguely mentioned the Burger King thing. We did not mention anything else. And the funny, I mean, not funny, but like, you know, people were emailing us this morning like, wow, you guys solved it. And I'm emailing them back. No, we did not. Kevin Smith of the police solved it. We just did an episode that happened to have, you know, timing. We had no idea, you know, like, but they're like, oh, you're in the know. That's why you dropped this. And no, we didn't.
It was just a coincidence. Well, they knew back in January. And Kevin said he had to sit on it till now. So, yeah.
Yeah, these things are delicate and you don't want to just say the wrong thing or, you know, like get anyone's hopes up. So it makes sense. And
well, they needed to get their probable cause affidavit in and a judge to sign it, but they couldn't tell anybody because they didn't want these two to flee.
Yes.
So he said they had to keep a lid on 40 some odd people because they arrested them simultaneously, one in, I think, Elkhart and one in, I don't know, Topeka, Shipshawana somewhere. I haven't read anything. So this morning on our local CBS, all it said was the state police were going to give an update on a decades-old cold case out of Noble County. So we're in Kosciuszko County, so people probably don't even know what they're talking about until it comes on. And they'll probably be on the new news.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. And we'll be doing a podcast. We'll kind of read through the probable cause affidavit, like just the public stuff that they released. And okay. We'll include your interview and we'll just be like, you know, don't give up if you have a family going through this. I mean, it can happen even years later.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I honestly thought I would be dead before this ever got solved. If it ever got solved.
I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for you. Listen, we'll let you get back to your day, but just we're thinking right. about you and like.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Listen, all right. Have a good day and
all right.
Pass it on to your brother too. I'm so happy for
all
you
right.
guys. All right.
Bye, all bye. Right. Thanks.
Bye. At The Murder Sheet, we're all about immersive audio experiences.
That's why we love Audible. An Audible subscription gives you access to thousands of audiobook titles. We especially enjoy their robust selection of mysteries, thrillers, and true crime.
I love Audible. I've really enjoyed listening to A Wicked Snow by Greg Olson. This story is all about a CSI investigator with a dark past and a terrible family secret. When I'm listening to Audible, it plunks me right down in the middle of the story. It's so spine-tingling that I can practically feel the cold air on my skin. Audible is your one-stop destination for thrillers and mysteries. Just be prepared to get spooked in the best possible way.
Listening to audiobooks offers a wonderful respite from the day. Audible allows you to listen on the go. I love taking a walk or a drive and just getting lost in a story. My favorite audiobook on Audible so far is Presumed Innocent, the book track edition. This classic legal thriller by Scott Turow is enhanced by a gripping musical soundtrack that amplifies the story's suspense and profound emotional beats.
As a new member, you can try out Audible for free for 30 days. This is such a valuable membership, and you get access to so many new listening experiences, including podcasts, Audible originals, and Audible exclusives, like the Words Plus Music series.
Visit audible.com/MSheet or text MSheet to 500-500.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Now we're going to take a second to look over the probable cause affidavit filed against Bandy and Lehman.
As a reminder, whenever we're reading from an official case document, that'll be designated by this sound. So this probable cause affidavit was written up and filed by Captain Kevin Smith, who, as we mentioned, was the lead detective on Laurel's case for years. He was a kid when the crime first happened and has been in close contact with Sarah Knisley, Laurel's sister, ever since he took over the case. And the charges against Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman are murder. On Thursday, August 7th, 1975, at approximately 4:16 a.m., the Indiana State Police received a missing person report from Richard and Wilma Mitchell, who reported their daughter, Laurel J. Mitchell, had not yet come home. 2. That same day at approximately 10:30 a.m., Dana Homister called the Indiana State Police Ligonier Post and reported that there was a body found in the river at the bridge on County Road 600 North, just west of County Road 400 West, in Noble County, Indiana. The bridge that Dana Homister described is adjacent to the Mallard Roos public access site. 3. State and local police officers responded to the area and encountered Glenn Dixon and his son, who had discovered the human body in the Elkhart River. After notifying Dana Hommister of the discovery, Glenn Dixon and Clyde Hommister returned to the scene, waded into the water, and pulled the body up onto the bank. 4. The officers who arrived at the scene reported seeing the body of a white female laying face down on the west bank of the river, near the boat landing ramp. On the body, officers found a class ring from Wawasee High School for the class of 1976, with the initials LJM on the inside of the ring. 5. Before the body was removed from the scene, Kosciuszko County Sheriff's Deputy Blackburn arrived with a photograph of Laurel J. Mitchell, which showed a white female consistent with the appearance of the body. So that's just going into more depth about how the body was discovered, what exactly happened, and sort of nailing down some of the timeline of the events of that evening.
6. An autopsy was performed on Laurel J. Mitchell's body later in the day, on August 7, 1975, by Dr. P. L. Sankey, M.D., at the Goshen General Hospital, and was witnessed by Sergeant T.P. Malone of the Indiana State Police. Dr. Sankey determined that the cause of Laurel J. Mitchell's death was drowning. Based upon the anatomical findings, Dr. Sankey concluded that Laurel J. Mitchell's death occurred rapidly and that she made a violent struggle to survive. 7. Dr. Sankey also noted that based upon her anatomical findings, Laurel J. Mitchell's death likely occurred within 2 hours of her last meal. 8. Noble County Coroner John E. Ramsey, M.D., issued a certificate of death for Laurel J. Mitchell, which indicates that the cause of death is drowning. 9. All the clothing and belongings found on Laurel J. Mitchell's body were noted and preserved for testing. These items included shoes, a sweatshirt that was zipped up, bra, underwear and blue jeans that were unzipped and unbuttoned and were inside out, as well as a silver necklace and one silver earring. So in that section, basically we're wrapping up the story of the discovery of the body. And it also, doesn't it, it gives us a pretty upsetting glimpse into Laurel's last moments, because it talks about her fighting.
It's really upsetting to think about the 17-year-old fighting for her life in this horrific situation. This crime is so heinous, and I think that's why it's spoken to a lot of people. We've had a lot of people reach out to us and say, like, you know, we hope this one gets solved. And, I mean, we get that with any unsolved case, I think, but I think Laurel's story resonates, and this just makes it even more. It's just so tragic. It's just a really horrific, tragic situation, and, you know, it's really upsetting to read these details, but at the same time, I'm glad we're reading them in a PCA for an arrest. 2 arrests. So this next part gets into witnesses. 10. An investigation ensued, and Indiana State Police investigators were able to determine that A. On Wednesday, August 6, 1975, Laurel J. Mitchell, who was then 17 years old, was dropped off at work by her mother at the Epworth Forest Church Camp Snack Bar. Epworth Forest is on the north side of North Webster Lake in North Webster, Indiana. B. According to her coworker at the snack bar, when it got close to the time to close, approximately 10 p.m., the coworker offered Laurel J. Mitchell a ride home, and she declined, indicating she had a ride. C. Laurel J. Mitchell left work around 10 p.m. Scott Pruitt advised he saw Laurel J. Mitchell walking in Epworth Forest and waved at her. Laurel J. Mitchell was supposed to meet friends at the Adventureland Amusement Park on the north side of North Webster. This would have required her to walk out to Epworth Forest Road approximately half a mile to the Adventureland Amusement Park. 11. The investigating officers were provided many potential leads by members of the public, most of which were not actionable. However, Indiana State Police detectives A. interviewed Frank Overmeyer and his wife on August 14, 1975. The Overmeyers lived on Epworth Forest Road, just west of Epworth Forest. Frank Overmeyer advised on August 6, 1975, he was at home watching TV and heard a loud car go by, and the car turned around and stopped east of their house. Frank reported he then heard what he thought sounded like someone slamming the trunk on a car. Frank reported he turned on his porch light and stepped outside. When he stepped out, 2 cars were leaving the area. The first car was the one that had gone by his house that he described was a red-orange GM product, possibly an Oldsmobile Cutlass. The second vehicle was a medium green Mustang. The Oldsmobile was very loud and sounded like it was loud by design. B. Interviewed Catherine Flynn, who lived half a mile east of Epworth Forest on Epworth Forest Road. She advised she was home on Wednesday, August 6, 1975, and that around 10 p.m. or a little later, an old car turned into the drive next door and turned around as it came back by her house. She informed investigators that she heard several voices say, "Let's get," or "Let's get her." She advised the car was very loud and probably a dark color. 12. No arrests were made and the case remained open for many years. Leads were investigated and potential suspects were identified, but no information that would support an arrest was developed. 13. In 2013, Detective Sean Dunafin of the Noble County Sheriff's Department was contacted by Renee Sexton from Port Charlotte, Florida. Detective Dunafin interviewed Sexton in Florida on June 7, 2013. Sexton informed Detective Dunafin that A, she lived in Noble County as a teenager and that she was 16 years old in 1975. B, she went on a date with a man named John Wayne Lehman, and while on the date, they went to a party. After the party, John Wayne Lehman was driving her home when John Wayne Lehman admitted his involvement in a crime he committed with his friend, Fred Bandy. C. John Wayne Lehman provided details of the crime to Sexton that are consistent with the findings made by police, where Laurel J. Mitchell's body was found, and the anatomical findings made by Dr. Sankey during the autopsy of Laurel J. Mitchell's body. 14. On July 3, 2014, I interviewed Bill McDonald at the Ligonier Police Department. McDonald indicated that back in 1975, he was a sophomore at West Noble High School, and that he socialized with a man named Fred Bandy Jr. Bill McDonald informed me that after the Laurel J. Mitchell murder, Fred Bandy Jr. told him that he had committed the crime that took place at Mallard's Roost. 15. On September 25, 2019, Noble County Sheriff's Department Detective Joe Hutzel met with Rick Johnson to interview him about the Laurel J. Mitchell case. Rick Johnson informed Detective Hutzel that he was friends with Bill McDonald and that while he was in high school, he, Bill McDonald, Fred Bandy, John Wayne Lehman, and others were at a party together. While at the party, a conversation about the murder of Laurel J. Mitchell came up, and Fred Bandy Jr. stated he and John Wayne Lehman committed that crime together.
I think at first blush, when you hear that last section, you're hearing a lot of instances where one of the accused men indicated to others that they had committed the crime. So they were basically going around confessing. And when you get that information, a part of you thinks, like, well, if these guys were going around confessing, why weren't they arrested years ago? And I think it's very important to remember that without evidence, a confession is just a story. Anything you hear is just a story without evidence. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who will go around and make false confessions. Variety of reasons for that. Maybe they're trying to impress people or intimidate people or try to get attention, or maybe they're mentally ill. But it happens. And so you cannot make an arrest just based on a story you hear. You need evidence that proves that that story is true.
Yeah, well said. That's also part of the reason that police do hang on to hold back information that they keep from getting into the media, because they're trying to possibly root out false confessions and drill down on real confessions. But the problem is that having a general idea of where Laurel's body was found and having a story about, I abducted and murdered her, without any corroborating evidence, a defense attorney could say, well, you know, the witnesses who heard him say that are lying. Or, you know, even if they have an tape recording, he was just trying to get attention. He wanted everybody to think he was a big bad criminal. He was just being stupid. You know, we've certainly heard about other cases where people will confess without evidence. And it's so frustrating, because I think you want that to result in something, but it really does take more. The police have to build a airtight case against somebody to get a prosecutor to sign off. So they could strongly suspect that somebody's confession is possibly true, but if they don't have any evidence, they literally can't do anything.
And they have to be very careful. They have to continue with their investigation, but they have to be careful not to feed details to the person who's making the confession to make the confession stronger. We covered the Burgachev case, and there's a pretty noteworthy example of a false confession in that case. A man named Donald Forster confessed to the crimes, and some law enforcement wasted literally years on that lead. And in the course of investigating it and interrogating him, they basically supplied him with details that made his story seem more credible when in fact it was a lie. So when you have people making confessions, you have to be very careful. You have to independently corroborate and verify what they say before you move.
Yeah. And as you said, it's really not even intentionally feeding somebody information. It can happen really casually. Like if I ask Kevin, if I'm interrogating him and I say, how many times did you stab her? You know, immediately he knows, okay.
She was stabbed more than once.
She stabbed more than once.
And she died from stab wounds.
Right. So, or at least stab wounds were a factor in the crime. So you can give information just by the questions you're asking. And a very savvy criminal who's maybe trying to get something can make a lot out of that. So,
and you also have to be careful in this instance, just judging by what's in the PCA. They were not talking at this point to Bandy and his associate. They were talking to people who'd heard stories about Bandy or who Bandy had confessed to. You have to be careful because in a case like this, if these guys get the idea that you're investigating them, they may just pack up and disappear. So it's important to move slowly, carefully, and methodically, which appears to be just how they handled it. So then the question is, what do you do to get evidence? Let's go back to the PCA. 16. In 2019, I resubmitted items of Laurel J. Mitchell's clothing to the Indiana State Police Laboratory Division for examination and potential DNA testing in this case. In February 2020, a certificate of analysis was generated by the Indiana State Police Laboratory Division that shows a male DNA profile that was developed from Laurel J. Mitchell's clothing. It was further determined that both profiles came from the same person. The investigation in this case had generated three other potential suspects, other than Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman. All three of the other suspects were eliminated as possible contributors of the DNA profile obtained from Laurel J. Mitchell's clothing. 17. In late 2022, I directed Indiana State Police Detective Arthur Smith to obtain a DNA sample from suspect Fred Bandy Jr. based upon the information that had been provided about Fred Bandy Jr. possibly being involved. Detective Arthur Smith obtained a voluntary DNA sample, buccal swab, from Fred Bandy Jr. on December 5, 2022, at Fred Bandy's residence in Goshen, Indiana. 18. Fred Bandy Jr.'s buccal swab was submitted to the Indiana State Police Laboratory Division. On January 13, 2023, Sharon Pollock, forensic scientist with the biology unit of the Indiana State Police Laboratory Division, sent me a certificate of analysis, which shows, among other things, that Fred Bandy Jr. is 13 billion times more likely to be the contributor of the DNA in Laurel J. Mitchell's clothing than any other unknown person. 19. A review of Indiana State Police records revealed a case report from August 14, 1974, showing Fred Bandy Jr. was driving a 1971 Olds at the time. Based upon the above-described facts, I believe that Laurel J. Mitchell left work at the Epworth Forest Church Camp Snack Bar on August 6, 1975, around 10 p.m., walking in the direction of the Adventureland Amusement Park. At some point, she was removed from the area by Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman, using Fred Bandy Jr.'s 1971 Oldsmobile. Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman brought Laurel J. Mitchell to the Mallard Roos public access site on County Road 600 North in Noble County, Indiana. At that location, Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman forcibly removed Laurel J. Mitchell from the car to the water, where she was then forcibly, deliberately drowned. It is my belief that by these actions, Fred Bandy Jr. and John Wayne Lehman committed the crime of murder, intentionally killing Laura J. Mitchell with premeditated malice.
Wow. So before we talk a bit more about this really stunning twist in the case, I just want to say one thing. The fact that we covered this recently, I don't believe has anything to do with this recent arrest. And I make a point of saying that because it is one of my pet peeves in the true crime genre when media entities take credit for solves that they don't deserve credit for. It's very rare for a podcast to actually have that level of an impact on a case. Most of what podcasts and other forms of media do are raise awareness and keep the pressure on the police to continue working it hard. But this PCA hopefully makes it clear to our listeners that this has been going on for years and we had no idea. The state police did not talk to us about this case, and I can very much understand why, because they're obviously in December 2022 closing in on these guys. So more power to them for that. Obviously, there was a good reason not to talk to media outlets at that point. And we didn't know about this. We had no idea this was coming. We're thrilled for Sarah and for her family and for anybody who's worked on this case for a long time. But we didn't know about it, and we're not going to take credit for it. And you shouldn't give us any credit for doing our jobs and covering the case, because it obviously, to be blunt, did not have an impact on how this was going. So I just wanted to say that because some people sent us really nice emails and saying, you know, good job. And I just want to be very clear. We didn't do anything other than just cover it. We had no impact on this. So hopefully that clears things up. I feel like this was a very good, methodical way of gathering evidence to support repeated assertions by these two men that, you know, they had killed Laurel. And basically, you know, trying to see which of the obviously they had multiple suspects in this case, but which ones actually are supported by the DNA evidence that, you know, would have had contact with her when they shouldn't have had contact with her. So just, it seems like a very diligent DNA focused work by the Indiana State Police, where they're not just relying on DNA to solve the whole thing, but they're also looking at the previous stories about, you know, trying to match the stories with the facts of the case. And that strikes me as very solid police work. So that's my opinion about that. And as for these two suspects who've been arrested and accused, of course, they're innocent until proven guilty. I will note that they're both 67 years old. Fred Bandy Jr. was apparently living in Goshen. Sorry if I'm saying that wrong. And John Wayne Lehman was living in Auburn. So that's according to the Ink Free News. And so they're 67. They're in their early 20s when this happened. And when you look up John Wayne Lehman on my case, the only thing that comes up is the murder of Laurel J. Mitchell now. But Fred Bandy Jr. had these child molestation charges. And so he obviously, you know, went on to prey on other underage kids. I hope that this strikes fear into anybody who did some vile stuff years ago. I hope people don't sleep at night because of this, because they're, maybe you said the wrong thing to some people at a party, and maybe your DNA is there, and maybe you're going to get a knock on your door, and you're going to have to answer for what you did, and you're going to have to look upon the family members of people you victimized. I hope cases like this terrify the predators who haven't been caught yet, because it should. It really should. But anyways, that's my daily rage, I guess, going off script. That's what happens. I just get into a rage. So, Kevin, as somebody, you know, we've both looked into cold cases and you know, certainly unsolved cases that have gone unsolved for a long time. This gives me hope for other people who might be in similar situations with their family member's case going unsolved, that things can happen even if it's years later.
There's always hope.
And we just want to say again that we are thrilled for Sarah, her brother, and everyone who worked in law enforcement, the media, and just anyone who was invested in seeing this awful mystery solved. Thanks again to Sarah for talking to us today. We pray that this story gives hope to family members of other victims of unsolved murders.
Thanks so much for listening to The Murder Sheet. If you have a tip concerning one of the cases we cover, please email us at murdersheet@gmail.com. If you have actionable information about an unsolved crime, please report it to the appropriate authorities.
If you're interested in joining our Patreon, that's available at www.patreon.com/murdersheet. If you want to tip us a bit of money for records requests, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/murdersheet. We very much appreciate any support.
Special thanks to Kevin Tyler Greenlee, who composed the music for The Murder Sheet, and who you can find on the web at kevintg.com.
If you're looking to talk with other listeners about a case we've covered, you can join the Murder Sheet discussion group on Facebook. We mostly focus our time on research and reporting, so we're not on social media much. We do try to check our email account, but we ask for patience as we often receive a lot of messages. Thanks again for listening.